This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. After a week in which the Portsmouth defender Sean Raggett celebrated not only his current club Portsmouth winning their sixth league game in seven, but also his FA Cup exploits with Lincoln City back in 2017, being immortalised on a postage stamp. If you'd like to buy one, they're £2.55, easily enough for a very large letter or a small parcel. It's a big bundle we're bringing you on this week's episode. We'll take a comprehensive look across the EFL's three divisions with a man who's won promotion four times.
I've got too much experience not to share. I think that's an important thing.
We'll hear how one Skybet League 2 club is doing its bit for those suffering as a result of the war in Ukraine.
It's our determination. We want to absolutely make the thing a sellout so we can send £100,000.
And how another is being resurrected by a manager who's on familiar territory.
This was a gamble for me. Hopefully it's a gamble that was worth taking, and I benefit, Carlisle United benefit, and we'll see where it all goes after that.
It's the official EFL podcast. So let's start this week's episode with a man who twice took Scunthorpe United into the Skybet Championship before leading Southampton from the bottom four of Skybet League One to the Premier League in consecutive seasons. Nigel Adkins has subsequently managed Reading, Sheffield United, Hull City and Charlton Athletic, and we couldn't be happier to have him back with us. How have you reflected on your time out since your Charlton experience, Nigel?
Yeah, I think it's always important. Listen, I didn't want to lose my job at Charlton, but as the owner said to me, that's football. I don't want to do it, but that's football. It's a results-driven industry, as we all know. But I've utilised the time as best as I can to reflect, as we always do. What's the lessons you could have learned? What could you have done better? What could you have done differently? Many things that, as I say, reflect on a positive way. But, you know, I'm fit, I'm healthy, I'm energised, and I'm raring to go again in the future.
Is there a kind of trajectory? Is there a kind of period of mourning when you do leave a job to maybe fuddle and confusion at first to then reaching a dip before you come up the backside and see the benefits from the things that you've learned?
It's a good thing. And obviously experience, you know, I've had a lot of experience now. And you get the opportunity. You need to have that bit of hippo time. You need to have that opportunity to go and reflect. What could you have done differently? Because when you're in it, sometimes you're just immersed in it. Sometimes when you're out of it, you can just sit back. And I think it's always good to write things down, have a journal and reflect on it. And what do you think you could have done differently, maybe? What was the good things you've done? Because there's many good things you've done. As I say, sometimes you just, results dictate a lot. But there's a lot of things you're trying to do behind the scenes to help build a football club and put things in place. So I think that's important. But one of the quickest turnarounds I had was when I left Southampton in the Premier League. It was like 3 or 4 weeks later, I was straight back into the Premier League again with Reading, you know, so I didn't really probably have that much time to go and reflect on the good things that we did at Southampton before you thrust back into the realms of management again and the organisation that's required to try and keep a football club going.
You've kindly agreed to help us have a little look at the runners and riders across the Skybet Championship Leagues 1 and League 10. I thought I'd do it in the form as well. We'll just preview the fixtures as we go. And Friday night game, West Brom at home to Huddersfield. And would they be the surprise package this season in the Championship, do you think? Unbeaten now in 16 in the league?
I think it's very important. We've just been touched on it about longevity of management and the opportunities. Obviously, the manager there was a few issues behind the scenes as well with the change, with the ownership issues. You know, Dean's gone back in now to steady the ship, as it were. And they obviously started off, it's quite challenging, but it just shows if you've got a plan, you stick to a plan, you get through it. And they're doing ever so well now. And they've put themselves, I think they went second the other night, didn't they? But it's going to fluctuate because obviously they've played more games than everybody else. And then the flip of it, you look at West Brom, have obviously gone in the wrong direction as well. And they've got the work cut out to try and even get anywhere near the playoffs now.
Early kickoff on Saturday, Fulham take their extraordinary goal-scoring exploits to Barnsley. 14 points clear. They've scored 44 away goals, Nige. That is more than 13 championship teams have scored home and away. And obviously, Aleksandar Mitrovic, we talk about him most weeks, 35 goals now. How do you manage a scenario like that where you have one individual that is so dominant and such a match winner? How do you stop the rest of your squad thinking he's going to do the job for them and keeping them in the groove?
Do you know what? It's a very good question. When we played Fulham pre-season, actually, when I was at Charlton, Marco was there. Real close game, but you could see straight away we played Crystal Palace, we played Reading as well, but you could see that they had something about them this season. And again, when you've got he's your finisher, he's your centre forward. You know, I remember speaking to Brendan Rodgers many years ago, and he talks about formations and different types of players you have in your team, you know, your baller and different things, but you need a finisher. And he's such a massive threat in the penalty area. He scores the goals, but likewise, he's been in the Premier League doing that as well. So I should imagine he's still on Premier League wages or close to it. So he's, you know, you look at a Fulham side, big squad of players, play real good creative football. Harry Wilson, for example, another player, you know, we took him to Hull City and he did ever so well for us at Hull City. Great to see him going in there. Little Harrison Reed as well, midfield player, out at Southampton. You always track his career because he'd been out on loan so many different places. You know, Gazzaniga is a sub-goalkeeper there now, and Michael Hector's been there. So they've got a big squad of players. You know, Marco's done a good job. They play good football, and as you just rightly say, they're scoring a shed load of goals. You know, so for me, they'll get up in the top two, and I thought that at the very beginning of the season.
Blackburn at home to Bristol City. Bournemouth, who are up to second after drawing with Peterborough in midweek, at home to Derby County. I'm curious as to what you think about the job that Wayne Rooney has done, Nigel. I went to see him for Football Focus last week. Hugely impressed. I always thought of him as a kind of rabid, must-win-every-battle sort of individual as a player, but much more strategic, much more sort of watching what's going on, a lot calmer as a manager. What impression have you got of him watching?
I've been really impressed from afar in the job that they've gone and done, because he's given that bit of belief and stability. Obviously, Steve McLaren's a vastly experienced manager, mentor, if you like, who's been in the background for him. You know, I know that he surrounds himself with good people. I mean, Justin Walker's one of the coaches there. Justin was a young player. I remember when we were at Scunthorpe United, and Justin was a young player coming through from, we'd taken him from Nottingham Forest. In fact, I've got a great picture of me treating, running on the pitch to treat him at Wembley when we were at Scunthorpe and we got promoted via the playoffs all them years ago. But, you know, he's done a good job, because maybe he's not been flustered. He's been at the top level his whole career, so we've seen all the things that go on. But he's been surrounded by some good people, and they've got some good players there. And they've got the momentum, so they've got every chance to get themselves out. Now, when we talk about Bournemouth with Scotty Parker, I think he's done really, really well since he's taken over as a manager. Obviously, the way he's gone and conducted himself. It was a great result for Cliffy Byrne and Grant McCann. They've taken over at Peterborough the other night. Can't dismiss that. They've gone in there and they've done well. But I think Bournemouth have got enough about themselves as well. When we look at a Solanke, for example, scoring some goals for them. They've got every opportunity for me, a Fulham and a Bournemouth being in the top two come the final day of reckoning.
Sheffield United, Paul Heckingbottom's got 11 wins in his 17 matches since taking over on the 25th of November. They go to Coventry. Millwall against Middlesbrough is interesting. For all Middlesbrough, brilliant at home, away 1 point from their last possible 15. I wonder whether we need to give a little chuckle under the chin to Gary Rowett at Millwall, 16 points from the last possible 18. And it just goes to show, Nige, doesn't it, that when we get to this point in the season, some do emerge from the pack, because Millwall find themselves just outside the playoff places. What are they as we speak now? Just 4 points off the playoffs after that run.
Yeah, they put themselves in the mix. And, you know, Jay Cooper, another player I had at Reading, he's got a great towering header at the weekend against Reading for Millwall. And as I say, Gary, over the course of a season, you'll find that you're going to have your dips where you've probably got key players injured. It's how you navigate yourself through that. And it's a lot, especially the Championship. It's such a tough season. And what you've got to try and do is you play a certain way of football at the start of the season. Can you be in and around to start off with, to stay in the race come January? Don't lose your best players come January transfer window. And then the latter part of the season, can you be in and around to then hit your momentum? And Millwall have certainly got a bit of momentum now. And the last place you'd want to go in the running is down to the Den. you know.
For, definitely.
And Gary's done well, but he's experienced. And I think that's what I keep alluding to. People have maybe got a bit of experience, have been there, seen it, done it, and you can navigate through the challenging time, i.e. when some results go against you, you can keep everybody calm. When you lose some key players, that's how you utilise the squad. But maybe that's how you've been managing the players who haven't been playing at a certain time. It's now your time to step up and go and be a leader and go and be a main player for the team while some key players are out. That's what a squad's all about over the course of a season.
Forest at home to Reading. Sunday's match is Luton, who are currently sixth, against QPR as seventh. 1-7 for QPR. But I wonder whether Luton, it's 6 wins in 8 for them. I mean, we should remember that it's only their 8th season back in the EFL after all the disasters of a decade ago, Nigel. I mean...
Oh, Nathan and his staff, they've done an unbelievable job. But again, your manager... gone away to Stoke, didn't quite work for him. You know, he's learned his lessons from that comeback. He's, you know, he's found his home, if you like, and everyone's bought into it. Everyone knows he's the manager. You know, you got Mickey Arford in there, and you know what I mean? So he's got good people who surround him. I mean, Nathan's very emotional, isn't he, when you watch him? He's so, yeah. So that enthusiasm is great, but sometimes you can be too high and he needs good people around him just to keep him calm and just balance, which is important. I've talked about the top two for me, Fulham and Bournemouth being the top two. You can go down to 12th position probably and think any one of them can get into the playoffs. And if you hit the momentum right, we just talked about Millwall, we talked about Ecky's doing a great job with Sheffield United. They're hitting momentum now. And obviously they've got Billy Sharp there. So if you've got a goal scorer on your team, you've always got a chance. It's who can hit that right momentum at the very, very end.
Yeah, just to underline what Nigel's saying, right now as we record this week's episode of the official EFL podcast, Preston are currently in 12th with 50 points, and actually West Brom are in 13th with 49, Luton in the last playoff place on 57. So you put
close,
two or three, it's going to be one heck of a finish to the season. Oh. Into Sky Bet League One, I feel a little bit for Mark Robinson, the Wimbledon manager, worst run since they were promoted to the EFL. It's 16 without a win. They're at home to Lincoln, Plymouth head to Bolton, Ipswich, Kieran McKenna, 10 wins in 14 at home to Portsmouth, 6 wins in 7. I've picked out MK Dons, currently third, Nige, against Wigan, currently second. I mean, MK Dons, unbeaten in the last 9, 5 consecutive wins. I mean, quite remarkable what's going on there under Liam Manning.
They've done really well. We actually played in probably one second or third game of the season. I think it was his first game that he came in. He took over from Russell, who'd gone to Swansea. And you could see straight away the way they wanted to play was good. It was attractive. Mo Issa being in there as well, always going to be a goal scorer. We looked at him at Charlton and he went there. But they've done great. It's going to be a cracking game. I was with Liam the other day on the Sky, one of the Sky games. And obviously Wigan being one of my previous clubs when I was a player, I always keep an eye out for them. And I think they've got games in hand. And with the squad of players they've got, I'm expecting Wigan to be in the top two, along with Rotherham.
Sheffield Wednesday are at home to Cambridge. Oxford, only Fulham have scored more goals this season at Shrewsbury. You talk about experienced managers. What about Carl Robinson? I mean,
you know,
effervescence, passion, could be heading into the playoffs for the third year in a row.
That's right. As you said, Carl's, he's a bit Marmite sometimes, isn't he? I got on really well with him. I've always liked him. He's got that enthusiasm. He wants to do well. And as you just said there, they've missed out the last couple of years. They actually picked us when I was at Charlton last year on goal difference to the playoff position, you know, and then they got beaten in the playoff game. But, you know, again, Carl's got, I'm sure if Derek's still helping him out there behind the scenes.
Yeah, Derek,
he is. Vastly experienced, somebody who can just be there just to help control the emotion and keep everything relative to where it all is. Because I say, when you're the manager in the dugout, it is emotional. You can be up and down. You just got to make sure you're not too up or you're not too down. You need, say, if you can surround yourself with good people, it can just keep the balance in there. But Carl, exciting, as you say, they're scoring goals. They're playing some good football and they're scoring goals. And again, it's not just the 1-0s that are getting there. On several occasions this season, I've seen. And again, we played them early on. As I say, we played MK Dons and then we played Oxford. I was away at Oxford and, you know, you could see there that they had something about them.
Sunderland at home to Crewe. And the other game of the day, as well as MK Dons Wigan, would be Wickham, who just dropped outside the playoff places as we record this. Against Rotherham, 10 league match unbeaten run ended by MK Dons. I mean, you know, if Paul sees Rotherham back up again, Nige, I mean, that'd be quite phenomenal. Extraordinary. It would be. Relegated when you take over halfway through the season. Bounce straight back, relegated. Bounce straight back, relegated. You bounce back for a third time. That takes some doing, does it not?
Without a shadow of doubt. I know myself, when we were at Scunthorpe, we got relegated and we bounced straight back at the first attempt. It's not easy to go and do. And as you say, you know, potentially it's going to be three times now for Paul. They've got an identity. They know who they are. They've got stability behind the scenes, which is important. You know, players know who the manager is. They're coming in. They're not thinking, oh, I'm going to be here longer than the manager's going to go and be. They know how they're expected to go and play. If they lose a game, it's not a disaster. You know, they've got a way of playing that is very effective. You know, so I think they've done really, really well.
Into Sky Bet League 2. Friday night game, Tranmere lost four of their last five after absolutely flying at one point. But up against Mansfield, and I love this start because going into last weekend's fixtures, Mansfield played on the Friday night. When they lost at Exeter City on the 23rd of October, Nige, they went into the bottom two. And here we are. They beat Exeter in the reverse game on the 4th of March, and they go into the top three, which again just goes to show, let your manager lay his base, make his signings, fully integrate them, and you reap the benefits. It would be quite easy for Mansfield to have yet again changed their manager, chopped and changed. New manager inherits a squad of players he's only half sure about, change of style, etc., etc. Mansfield reaping the benefits.
Very much so. I think what you've just said there is echoed across the game, actually. It's short-termism. You know, you need a bit of time. Nigel's done a great job at Mansfield going in there. As you say, they're on a great form of momentum. They win their couple of games. They've got every chance of automatic. But likewise, they've got a big squad of players. I think there's a fair bit of investment in at Mansfield. But they know who the manager is. They know what's expected. They're not looking over the shoulder. And they've ridden out the challenging time what you're going to go and get. So say it's about people. Get the right people in, let them get on with it. Be supportive. I think if you're an owner, again, we keep going down to you know, attitude reflects leadership. It's the ownership everywhere you want. You need stability. You need support people. It's great when things are going well, you know, boom. It's when it's challenging time. That's when you need that support to keep everybody focused on what they're doing. So Mansfield are doing great. Obviously, I've got a soft spot for Tranmere Rovers. You know, Mark Palace, the owner's done great there. And Mickey Mellon's come back. And you want them to do well. They're hanging in that playoff position. They've lost a couple of games, but momentum can quickly swing. And I think that's going to be a really exciting game to go and watch. And the team that probably wins that can carry on or start a new bit of momentum. So that's going to be an interesting game, that one.
Bristol Rovers are only 2 points off the playoffs. Has Joey Barton surprised you with what he's been able to achieve?
No, Joey's a fiery character. He's a thinker. Joey wants to win. You know, obviously they've gone down last season. So you'd expect Bristol Rovers to be bouncing straight back in the top three in the division. You know, obviously they're off the playoff position, but they've got every chance of being in it. And you wouldn't bet against them if they got in it, you know, because again, they will be coming from a position where momentum will be on their side going into the playoffs. Same as Port Vale. You know, I've got Andy Crosby's been with us for many, many years. He's down at Port Vale and they've got a couple of games in hand as well. You know, I saw the game at the weekend where, you know, they conceded in the 96th minute from the set piece, which is very uncharacteristic of them this season. But they've got something about them, and you wouldn't bet against them if they got themselves into the playoffs.
Carlisle at home to Northampton. We'll hear from the Carlisle manager, Paul Simpson, a little bit later on this week's episode of the Official EFL Podcast, when he's three games back in charge of the club. Northampton's 125th anniversary on the day we're recording this episode of the Official EFL Podcast. Exeter, we mentioned, are at home to Salford. Forest Green, who've had their longest winless run of the season, but still with a decent lead at the top of the division. They entertain Bradford City. Leighton Orient, no league wins in 13, have just appointed Richie Wellens as the new head coach. They head to Hartlepool. Dare I ask you, Scunthorpe, just 4 wins in 35, at home to Colchester United. We're going to hear Robbie Cowling, the Colchester United chairman, up next on this week's episode. But Scunthorpe must break your heart, Nige, doesn't it, to see what's going on?
Yeah, in a word, it does. You just touched on Forest Green. I'm actually going to do the radio with the commentary for the Forest Green game against Scunthorpe United. So it'll be my first chance to watch them live this season. But it does break my heart. Obviously, I was there for 14 years. We had a great chairman, and obviously we've gone from League One, we've won with League Two. You know, I was there as a physio, and we had two promotions under Brian Laws as the manager. And then we go and get a couple of promotions with me. It was me as the manager, but we had a great family club, and everyone was pulling together, and the fans were together with the team. And it was, as I say, I had 14 special years there. And to see the thought that they could go out of the league, and they've really got, they're up against it, let's face it. Let's not hide away from the fact they're up against it. And you know, whoever goes into the National League, it's such a big challenge. There's an argument the National League's actually stronger than League Two. I've spoke to a few people about that this season. But it does break my heart to see the situation that they find themselves in. They've got a great manager. They've got a real good manager in Keith Hill there at this moment in time. So it's a shame. You know, the Keith's trying to do everything he can. But again, we turn around and we talk about recruitment. It's such a big, big thing.
Elsewhere, Newport County head to Stevenage, and congratulations to Sutton United. It's the 124th anniversary in the last week, into the Papa John's Trophy final after beating Wigan Athletic on penalties, where they will play Rotherham United on the 3rd of April. How does the rest of the season look for you, Nige? Are you looking to get back in? Are you going to wait till the summer? Are you getting knocks on the door with opportunities? What's your future hold?
Good question, Clem. Obviously, we've had I've had a short period of time out since Charlton. I've not applied for any jobs yet. I've not looked for any jobs yet. I do some mentoring. I do some talks. You know, I'm quite busy in what I'm doing. I'm always learning. I'm keeping my eye out. And but I love being at a football club. I love being a manager. I love being a coach. I love being involved in all the different things. So we'll just have to wait and see. You know, I've got bags full of enthusiasm. Now, obviously, experience of the good things, the bad things. I think it's important that you go through, you know, you fail, because that's how you learn to go and succeed. So when we look at it, I mean, I was reading something from Eddie Jones the other week. And again, he's more interested in trying to speak to people who have failed and how they've recovered from that than the people who have maybe been successful all the time. Because again, you do need that resilience to, you know, pick yourself up and go again. So, but for me, I love football. I'm enthused by it. I love trying to help people just get better, how you can bring a team together, how you can just share the experience. I've got too much experience not to share. I think that's an important thing. And in any way I can help people, that's what I'm looking to do.
Thanks for sharing with us today. Great to talk to you.
All the best.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Russia's appalling invasion of Ukraine has never been far from the thoughts of most of us over the past 2 weeks. Across the EFL, clubs and supporters have been showing their solidarity and support for the people of Ukraine with a clear message that football stands together. Fundraising efforts to provide humanitarian aid have been rapidly mobilised, and the Colchester United owner and chairman, Robbie Cowley, is leading the way. And in particular, Robbie, with a huge gesture, your game against Forest Green Rovers on the 21st of March. Well, I'll let you just explain what's going to happen.
Yeah, so the game's already due to be on TV on Sky, so it's likely to get, you know, a lot more people viewing it and seeing what we're doing there. So what I decided to do for that game was to make every ticket £10. And what we're going to do, we're going to donate all of the receipts, all of our gate receipts, we're going to donate to humanitarian aid. Almost certainly now, we've been looking at who to, probably the British Red Cross, to distribute it. So it's our determination. We want to really encourage everyone from Colchester to get there and absolutely make the thing a sellout. A, so we can send £100,000 for humanitarian aid. And secondly, so we can motivate many other clubs to do something similar, so that that 100,000 can hopefully turn into millions. That's the aim of what we're trying to do.
It's an amazing gesture. I mean, I guess it's one of those moments where, as much as we love our football, as important as the clubs are to the communities, kind of what we are watching, those barbarous acts on the other side of Europe, football gets swatted to one side, and it doesn't matter how tough a time you've had over the last couple of years with the pandemic, etc. You just feel very, very significantly that you've got to do your bit.
Yeah, I mean, it puts it all into perspective, doesn't it? It has been a tough 2 years, and you can feel sorry for yourself about how hard things have been. But it puts it in perspective. I mean, we're all seeing the newsreels. We're seeing people that have having their lives devastated. Now, 2 weeks ago, some of them people would have been grumbling on the Monday about how badly their team performed on the Saturday and whether they may get relegated or not relegated. And they don't have that luxury anymore. You know what I mean? What we think is, sometimes in football, we think things are so, you know, like disastrous or you know, crucial and that. And then it really makes you realise and put it in perspective what really matters, you know, and that we've got that luxury to enjoy the things that we enjoy. So yeah, for me, it's never been an option to sit back and do nothing. It's always been thinking, what can we do? You see what the Polish people are doing. They're so generous. They're so kind. And they don't have much to give, but what they've got, they're prepared to give it. So we have to do something.
Yeah. You know, you make an interesting point, or you allude to it, about language, because it's always annoyed me, the language of football, that phrases like, it's a catastrophic back pass. It just... You know, we overuse these words because it's nothing compared to what is going on for those poor approaching 2 million people who have literally just had to pick up what they could carry and leave behind life as they know it. I mean, can you imagine, Robbie? Can you imagine if you or I had to do it? Doesn't bear thinking about, does it?
No. Sadly, we're having to imagine because of the state of the world, Jim. We're having to imagine and put ourselves, because we're seeing so many people that hit you home so hardly when you see, you know, what's going on. There was a young lady on the BBC News today, and she was explaining about the 3 days that she was in Mariupol, I think it's the pronunciation it is. She was there for 3 days when they had no running water, no electricity. They were being shelled constantly. There was no food left in shops or no medicine to get. And she described this, and it was horrendous. And then she was saying about, that was a week ago. She left a week ago, and there's people had a further week of this. And you just had to listen. There's no way you could turn away from it and not feel for what these people are describing. So, yeah, we need to act, and we need to do something. And if it means a little bit of hardship for ourselves in the coming months and years, so be it.
Have you got refugee supporters? You obviously have indigenous population that have been in and around the club through the generations, but has it also been an area of quite significant inward migration? And have you been welcoming people from various communities, war-torn communities where some tyrant is threatening their very existence? Has that been happening over the last decade or so, would you say?
I'd say it has, but again, I'm maybe ashamed to say that I'm not as aware of these things as perhaps I should be, and obviously that's shameful to admit that maybe something didn't motivate me earlier to do some of the way that I'm motivated to solve this thing. But we're definitely looking at what we can do. So quite a few people have said, so what's happened is we're making it £10 a ticket. Now, some season ticket holders and some of our box holders have paid more than £10, so we're refunding them that. Okay, and if they paid less, I'm making it up. But where we paid them more, they're saying, look, just donate it to the charity. We don't really want to come. So what I'm saying is, well, first of all, I want to make sure it's full. So please use that money. We'll give you some extra tickets and make sure people come and fill the stadium up, because it's important that people see a strength of feeling. And then there's others where we're saying, well, let us have the tickets. And what we're going to do is look and see if we can find refugees, people like that, and get them to the game to, you know, because I think it's important as well that, If it can be seen full, it can be seen that people the other side of, you know, of Europe are caring about what's going on in Ukraine. That's got to lift the spirits of the people that are refugees. It's got to lift their spirits if they see that. So it's so important that we make it a sellout crowd, and we show everybody how much that it does mean to us all.
I mean, this is obviously quite personal from your point of view. I'm guessing you grew up with stories from passed on to parents, from grandparents, of what was happening across the whole of Europe 80 years ago. Are you seeing little sort of mirrors there?
Yeah. So my mum was evacuated as a young girl, about 12 years old, I think, when she was evacuated. And I know that affected her the rest of her life and the way that she was. My nan lived in the East End of London and was bombed, and, you know, I don't know if she had a bomb come in her house, but she was there when there was a blitz, and she lost her dad in the First World War. So yeah, it does. And I've always been fascinated by the war and the bravery of people. And you wonder, how brave would I have been if I'd ever have to do that? And I'll hopefully never find out. But yeah, it does touch you. And you just see that it's horrendous what's being done. Horrendous. And you just wonder where it stops.
Yeah, it's a short, sharp shock, isn't it? Because I'm sure particularly younger generations never foresaw that something like this was going to happen within their lifetime. And yet here we are. I suppose there have been disasters and conflicts and evil tyrants like this across the whole of history. Perhaps it was folly that we thought it wouldn't happen within our lifetime, Robbie.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And listen, my youngest son has just given us our sixth grandchild 2 days ago. And you just look and you think, what a world.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and what a world they're being suddenly brought into, you know, where there's so much uncertainty. And I've been so fortunate, you know, I've had 61 years of where I could grow up and make plans for the future and have the freedom to, you know, to make whatever I wanted to of myself and do things. So I really, really hope this thing gets sorted out quickly and everyone else can go back to that sort of freedom again. But it makes you think, doesn't it? It really does, honestly.
It really does. It's beyond sobering. Listen, football is clearly secondary to the important messages of this conversation, but I suppose we should just address it. I mean, another tough season, mate, and tough decisions for you there along the way.
Yeah, so last season was tough and I sort of made decisions at the beginning of last season that I knew would make that a tough season, you know, because we didn't know what was happening financially. We let five players go that we would have normally renewed and we knew it would be tough. That seems to have just stuck with the club now. So I feel we've got a really good squad this year and we should be fine with the battles that we've got. But it's hard to get yourself away from that rut when you get into it. So we've got a lot of work to do. But we've got some great characters in the building, so I feel confident. We had a good win on Saturday, which helped. But yeah, very, very difficult, especially League Two. You know, League Two, I think there's most squads are maybe three players short of being either a relegation battle or a promotion battle. It's such a fine league, and we can all beat each other.
Yeah, well, we were just reflecting with Nigel Adkins, who's kind enough to share his thoughts just before you came on there, that, you know, you've only got to look at a Mansfield Town that over the space of 3.5 months can go from the relegation zone into an automatic promotion place, or even, you know, one win for Exeter takes them from the edges of the playoffs into an automatic promotion place. It's one of those leagues, isn't it? Listen,
it is,
Robbie.
Yeah.
A game for Ukraine is taking place on Monday, the 21st of March. It's a 7:45 kickoff. Colchester's game against Forest Green Rovers. Tickets are £10 each. 100% of the revenue raised is going towards humanitarian aid. Thanks for joining us, Robbie. Great the way in which you are leading the way and inspiring others to action. Wish you well for the rest of the season. Thanks for joining us on the official EFL podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Let's finish this week by talking to a man who is back on home turf. He was born in Carlisle. He finished his playing career with Carlisle United. Between 2003 and 2006, he managed the club in successive seasons, back up from the National League and straight through into Sky Bet League One. And Paul Simpson is the man the club turned to 3 games ago when they found themselves 91st in Sky Bet League Two. And as much as I know I'm going to have, yes, we've still got lots of games to go. I tell you what, Paul, you couldn't have asked for a better start, could you? 3 wins out of 3?
It's probably been better than my wildest dreams, if I'm going to be honest with you. I did not imagine it was going to happen. And to be honest with you, Clem, I didn't know what I was coming into. I just didn't know. I followed the results. I knew they were 91st in the table, but I didn't know what to expect. So literally, I had about an hour and a half, 2 hours on the computer, just looking at best clips of the players, just trying to see what I was going to face the next day. And they've been superb, the players. They really have. They've worked extremely hard. The one thing that gets thrown at players when results are not going the way is that they've got no commitment, there's no desire, they don't work. Well, that is not what I've experienced in these 3 games. They have worked the socks off, they've put the bodies on the line, and they've earned the results, and long may that continue.
Wait a second, you're telling me you did your due diligence once you'd accepted the job. Are you supposed to do that before you accept the job to make sure you think you've got a chance of success?
To tell you the truth, it was one of them situations where there was no rumours that Keith Millen was going to lose his job. And when I got the phone call to see if I would be interested in taking it on, one of the things I said was, have I missed something here? Has Keith lost his job and I'm not aware? And they said, no, we've got a meeting with him tomorrow. And I just said, well, I can't sit down and talk to you about a job when somebody's still in place. So if you don't mind, I'd rather you wait until you deal with that properly. And then I'll gladly sit down with you and I'll have a chat about it. And let's see what we can do. So I literally went on the computer upstairs, had a look at what was going on, see the players. And then the following day, I got the phone call to say, we've dealt with the managerial situation. He's now cleared his office and left. We'd like you to have a chat. So that was it. Just all systems go from that point on.
Which kind of begs the question. I mean, there's a lot of managers. Obviously, every year the pool gets added to with those that come out of playing and move into the field and get qualified and stuff. Are your beliefs quite old school? Is it quite cutthroat out there in terms of getting a managerial job, do you think, Paul?
Oh, totally. Really is. Unfortunately, it's a horrible situation. You know, I was sitting waiting for people to be losing their jobs, not wishing them to lose their jobs, but knowing that it's going to come. And unfortunately, the way it works, and a lot of people have got absolutely no shame in doing it, they will go to a club where they know the manager's under pressure and they will make their business to be around chairman and directors. And I personally don't agree with it. I've been on the receiving end of it myself when I've been in a managerial role. And my whole philosophy, my mindset when I'm in a management job is that I know I'm going to be sacked at some point. I totally get that. That's just the nature of the beast. But what you don't need is people actually sort of loitering on the shoulder of the directors and waiting and putting a little word in to try and encourage them to sack you. So I make a point of not doing that. But it happens. And unfortunately for Keith, he lost his job, which gives me an opportunity here. And really, it's the only way I was going to get a chance as an English coach. It is really, really difficult to get your foot back into the door in a managerial role.
Oh, wait a second. It's only 4 years ago since you led England's under-20s to World Cup success. But you're telling me that counts for nothing?
Well, it seems that way, Clem. Yeah, I'll be honest. I left Bristol City in the end of October, and I've not had a sniff. I got an inquiry to go for an interview at a club, went for the interview, never even got a call back with feedback. I'm told there was four or five people who were interviewed. I never even got a call to say, you were rubbish, you were brilliant, whatever, absolutely nothing. And that's, I actually find that just rude, if I'm going to be honest with you. But also, it's really, really difficult to get back in. So this was a gamble for me. I knew that I had to take a gamble to get myself back on the map again. Hopefully, it's a gamble that was worth taking. And I benefit, Carlisle United benefit, and we'll see where it all goes after that.
Gamble because the risk is that if you don't make a success of it, you would actually make your employability even worse in some people's eyes.
Exactly. You know, I if it doesn't work for me, if we go down, then people will look and go, let's not bother. But if we make a success of it, Carlisle United have got issues that they need to deal with off the field. We've got issues on the field as well, but on and off the field, we need issues resolved. So it may lead to an offer to stay, but it also may lead to other people thinking, God, I forgot he was a manager. You know, he might do a job for us. And that's the gamble that I had to take.
What's the comparison between the club as you left it in 2006 to go off and take the Preston North End job and where we are doing live maths here? Is it 16 years later?
It's a long time. I couldn't tell you when. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, obviously the playing personnel has changed. That goes without saying. But can you instantly smell whether a club is on the up or on the down in terms of the facilities that you find, the equipment and resources you've got available?
Yeah, I think you can. It's tired. The club's just tired. I think it's, and unfortunately, everything in this game is dictated to by finances. So the finances are not there at the moment. There's three of the directors are still at the football club from when I left. Obviously, the owner, Fred Story, has left the club. And Fred was a huge part of what we were able to achieve when I was there first time round. But they've still got the fan base. We've still got the same issue. We're struggling to find training facilities all the time, but we've got two or three that we can use. I've had to call on favours to get some new footballs in this week, which we've had delivery of 20 new footballs, which has been brilliant because it gives the players a lift. Things like GPS vests, we've managed to get those because they were a bit threadbare. So I'm actually exploiting friends and contacts that I've got in the game just to try and give the players a lift and give them that bit of a feel-good factor.
Yeah, that shocks me a wee bit, but I guess you're that sort of imprint manager, having done it before, and you steered the club through one of the floods that engulfed Brunton Park. I guess you're that kind of guy, aren't you, that tries to affect any part of the club, not just the first team that you possibly can, in order to get 0.5% of residual increase?
That's exactly the way I'm looking at it. If I can do things which will give the players a bit of a lift, which will make them feel a little bit better, and, you know, I know when I was a kid, if you get a new pair of boots or a new kit or you get a new football, you suddenly feel $1 million. You get a bit of a spring in your step. Professional footballers are still the same. Even at this level, I think the higher you go, when you're talking Championship level and Premier League level, all of these things are just, they're a given. And if I'm going to be honest, I think they're probably taken for granted. But at this level, they appreciate those sorts of things. And they appreciate the fact that you're trying to make it better, you know, and I'll give the clubs their credit as well. They've had a big push this week, and they're asking for supporters to come and do whatever it takes to get success. I've just spoken to my son down in London, and they've got a bit of a scheme going this weekend where they're asking people to buy a bunch of tickets to donate to a worthy cause. So my son Dominic has been on the phone today to try and buy some tickets to give to a school. And they've just said, we've run out of tickets that we want to allocate for it. So there must have been a really, really big push for it. There must have been a real good response. So hopefully this weekend against Northampton, we can get a good crowd in, get a good atmosphere, get a real positive feel to the place. And hopefully the players will respond.
It just goes to show, doesn't it? Because I think the days of what I call an imprint manager, somebody that can affect the team, the club. Is that rosé wine you're drinking there, Paul, in the middle of this? It looks
apple and blackcurrant it is.
All right, fair.
It's just in a Moretti glass. That's maybe what's confusing.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. I'm glad we sorted that out. You know, I do wonder whether the days of the imprint manager are, well, they're definitely on the decrease, but you're giving a little indication that at a certain level, you can still affect a whole community by your deeds on the field. Because, you know, we're obviously moving towards this model of technical sporting director, coach, head of operations, etc. So it's more and more difficult for one individual to affect an entire community, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it is more and more difficult. But, you know, the top and bottom of it is I'm here for 15 games. That's my remit, just to come in, deal with 15 games, do everything I possibly can to try and affect the players to get some positive results. And we're building it. The first game was a scrappy one, but a really, really good win away at Orient. The next one was a game against Rochdale where we got absolutely battered footballing-wise, but we scrapped and battled and won that game. And then on Saturday at Oldham, we hung in for the first half, conceded late, but second half, we played some really good football and created some good opportunities. This week in training, they've looked another step up in terms of football. So we've got to just try and get a positive response as much as we possibly can from the players. And if it means me going out and doing things in the community, if it means me adding another row of pegs in the changing room so they've got pegs to hang the clothes on when we go out training. If it means getting new footballs, all of those little things, then I'll do it because I want it. I want Carlisle United to be a Football League team for next season. And if I can do it with little things like that, then that's good for everybody.
Paul, I don't think I'm betraying anything that's not already in the public domain, but you have had a scary last year yourself. So how different do you feel taking your first kind of managerial role since your illness?
Well, in terms of the illness, I don't feel anything whatsoever. And I always find this quite strange, because when people say, oh, I didn't realise you were ill, and I say, I wasn't ill. And Jackie says, you were, you had cancer. So you were ill, but I didn't have any pains. I didn't have any symptoms. The service that I had through the LMA health scheme were absolutely fantastic. And they diagnosed the tumour before I had any symptoms. While I was isolating to go into hospital for surgery, I got all of the symptoms that I probably should have got before the diagnosis. So I had the real kidney pain. I was passing blood in my urine, and that scared the life out of me. Wow. So I got hold of the surgeon, and he said, well, this is really strange, because normally you'd have those symptoms, you'd go to your doctor, he'd refer you to me, I'd send you for a CT scan, I'd then call you and say you've got a cancer tumour. You've gone straight in with the CT scan, with the cancer tumour, and now you're doing it all back to front, really. So I can just sit and say, don't worry about it, it's perfectly normal, you're going to be fine, I'm going to operate in a week's time, and you get on with it. So I've been really lucky in terms of the diagnosis, the treatment. My rehab went really well, because I was in a real good state of health when I went in for surgery. So in terms of the health, I feel perfectly fine. The fact I've only got one kidney doesn't seem to be affecting me. Everything seems okay. I've had the all clear from a scan in January. My latest blood tests are all fine. So I don't feel any different, but I think over the years, so since my last proper managerial job, which was Stockport County, which when I look back now was the worst decision I've ever made in my footballing career, to take that job, to be lied to and be deceived like I was horrendous, and it put me off management, and I decided to have some time away to go and sort of lick my wounds, learn from other people. And I think I've developed as a person, but also as in terms of the way that I go about doing the job, because I'm a lot calmer about it. Steve McLaren taught me about trying to be as positive as possible with the players and being upbeat all the time. I don't think I can actually be like him on the training field, because he is excellent on the training field, but I learned a lot from him. That has made me realise that I need to adjust my way of working. So far, so good, but it's only been about 10 days, I think.
Oh, you see, we got there in the end, didn't we? I said you were going to say, we've only had three games, there's another dozen to go, and we get to that point. For anybody that might have missed it, Paul was with Steve McLaren as assistant at first Derby County and then at Newcastle United. Just to finish on a positive note, well, it can't be any more positive than the fact that you're feeling so great, looking so great. Yeah. But the England players that you had back in 2017, an immense source of pride and inquisitiveness from you as to how their careers are developing since you had them for that huge high?
Oh, of course, yeah. I follow them all, and it's been brilliant, you know, to see how they've all developed, see how they've all come on. You know, I watched Everton the other night, and unfortunately they got a bit of a hiding, but it was great to see John Joe Kenny playing. Good to see Freddie Woodman getting a loan move and getting some first team football again down at Bournemouth. But people like Victor Mori, you know, I could go through the team. Kyle Walker-Peters playing regularly in the Premier League. Lewis Cook back in the first team after injury. Dom Solanke scoring goals, Dom Calvert-Lewin, Adi Luckman. There's some really, really talented players and going to be pushing to be playing senior England football. And hopefully the group that I had in the under-20 World Cup, the under-17 World Cup winning team with Hudson-Odoi and Sancho and Foden, I'm really hoping that they're all going to be able to push on and give us England fans something to cheer about in a major tournament for the seniors.
Paul, it is fantastic to have you back professionally. It's even better to see you looking and sounding so well. Thanks for joining us on this week's Official EFL podcast.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it really is great to have Paul Simpson back. That is it for this episode. A big thank you to him, to Robbie Cowling and to Nigel Adkins. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name is Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.